Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Paul. Good to be with you today. You know, today's show is going to be fun because we have back our good friend Terry Hershey. And as many listeners know, Terry is author of 17 books. He's an acclaimed public speaker, teacher, and what I like to call, and I think this is really apt, is a minister of grace and human dignity. Today, Terry and I will attempt to tackle a most sensitive question, and that is, how can detachment provide emotional sanity in an otherwise insane world? Now, at first glimpse, it would seem that to detach from your emotions might lead to some sort of callous and calculated mind, perhaps devoid of any compassion or empathy. But in truth, if not managed well, detachment could indeed foster such problematic thinking. Still, I remain a pretty strong advocate of a healthy form of detachment, and those are the murky, troubled waters that Terry and I have elected to swim in today. So let's get on to this thing. Yo, Hirsch, what's up, man?
Charles, this is not atypical of the kind of conversations we have had over the years. Back in the day, it would have been over wine before you said no to that, which is a good thing. But we've still had those conversations, meaning we start the conversation having no idea where either one of us stand at the beginning.
And, you know, isn't that a, you know, that's a conversation that it is, it's a little bit, you know, a little bit awkward to do it on air without having any idea what it's going to come out like, but that makes it all the more fun.
That's the whole point.
Do you remember?
Point, yeah. If you go in with everything, with your T's crossed and your I's dotted, you're not really having a conversation.
You're not. No, I wholly agree. Do you remember, you know, as I take us down memory lane and I do a diversion here, back when we did a conference together, I believe it was Milwaukee, and it was the winter in Milwaukee, and neither one of us had any money, and we kind of got set up to have a nice dinner, and we had my dinner with Andre dinner. And it was about a three-hour dinner, and it was no topic. We just discussed, and then we had these long periods of silence, which really, I think, reveal a good friendship, that you can have silence and you're comfortable with the silence. You don't feel like you have to invade the silence. And that was that kind of conversation where there was no agenda, no topic. We just kind of bantered around. I'll never forget that conversation. That was delightful.
That was a good one. I love memories with you because we also had another wonderful, great conversation in Chicago one night when LeBron James walked in.
We won't tell people how we got to sit next to John. Do you remember how I got us the seat next to LeBron?
Yeah.
I don't think we're allowed. I have to use words that we really can't use on air.
Yeah, Charlie said I use some frequent invectives that would not be good for other diners.
That begin with F.
Yeah. And LeBron James walked in, and by golly, that was quite a night. That was good.
Yeah, and I tried to get his autograph, and his whole posse came up and wanted to club me.
Well, it'd be a good autograph to have today. They did good. The Lakers did great.
Yeah, they did good. That final game was their defense finally came alive. You know, Terry, I thought truly that over the years, you and I had pretty much covered the subjects of life, the universe, and everything, but I don't recall us ever talking about the idea of detachment, and I have no idea what's on your mind, so this is going to be fun. And I'd like to start off by just, you know, jogging your memory, just a short time back. You remember back in January of this year, I took that extended silent and requested sequestered retreat.
And, yeah, I do.
And it was in meditation at that retreat, I first came upon the idea of detachment. And it seemed to me for undue attachment, for it is undue attachment to people, to possessions, even to beliefs that take us to unnecessary states of stress, resentments, or false sense of security. They are what the mystics call the remnants of the false self, which is, you know, taking over this true comfortable self that is comfortable with each other, with ourselves. And the spiritual masters that I've been studying all teach about the need to detach from anything that may lead us to something other than love. And just based on what I've said there, what strikes you? Anything?
Well, for starters, I'm now that you added the phrase undue attachment, I'm with you. Because I have a problem with the word detachment just in and of itself.
Okay.
Because my entire psyche is predicated on detachment. In other words, when you did you ever read Alice Miller's stuff, The Drama of the Gifted Child?
She's a novel writer?
No. She's a psychologist.
I'm thinking of Alice Walker, I think.
Yeah. But the at some point when you're wrestling with something in your childhood that gave you a sense in your language, which I agree with, that gave you a false sense of self. In other words, it gave you a sense of yourself that really is not you at all. It's a sense of self that's lodged in either what people think or what you have to do or who you have to impress or a whole bunch of other things, or the shame that you're going to get if you're not that self. Well, if you've been raised that way, then detachment becomes the only way you find sanity.
But what's wrong with that, Terry?
Because you can only find undue attachment when you have at your core and you've recognized what is truly a grounded self. When you have a truly grounded self, then you can make choices for undue attachment. If you simply do detachment without having any awareness of what the reason is for that, then you're lost.
Then it becomes a pathology almost.
It is a pathology.
Yeah.
And then what you do is you detach, but you're swimming for something because you're not sure who you are. And the thing about all the spiritual leaders to readers teachers that you're talking about is that their capacity for that is because they had a sense of grounded self. So in a sense, they could say no to the ego, no to the false self. They could say no to that because they didn't need to play that game.
Boy, that is, Terry, that really is, in my mind, that's exquisite thinking. That's brilliant thinking, because if you don't have something solid to attach to, some sense of, not just a sense of self, but this is where, you know, I'm not going to mince words. This is where the role of the holy other comes in, that there is something else that you attach to that is bigger and greater than yourself, that is goodness and love and mercy. And when you have those to attach to, then you're attaching to something that you have hope for, that you have a chance of recovery. But like you're saying, if you're attaching to these just simply the antithesis of what you've been taught, There is no grounds in it. There are no boundaries around it. No sense of reality.
Yeah, and I think I'm thinking out loud about that, or at least in my head about that thing about attachment. So there was an article in in an Irish newspaper about a guy, a Connemara man, who was arrested for an automobile accident. And in the article, the police were there trying to get the story about what happened in the accident. And in the paper, there was this sentence that said, there were many onlookers, but there were no witnesses.
How do you interpret that? That makes sense to me, you know, metaphorical
sense. So you start with me. You say, Terry, what do you want to be? You want to be detached. But before I'm detached, I need to be grounded to something authentic. And I prefer the word grounded to attached. I need to be grounded to it because this is the reality of who I am. You talked about, you used the word grace at the beginning. So I want to be grounded there. And so I bring, and the verb I like here is, then I bring to that world an investment. And if I'm invested in that, if I'm invested in grace and dignity and that, then when I'm buffeted by all the other stuff, I have the permission to undo myself from that other stuff because of the grounding I have.
That is such solid thinking. I so agree, because as you were talking about all of the false selves that you had raising up, that they became your attachments, and that you were attached to being rewarded for these false selves, that there then becomes an extreme difficulty in a concept that's very important to you in authenticity, to what are you authentic? You don't even know.
See,
to what
you're
authentic.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the difficulty was because I didn't know any better. I assumed that was the only story. That was the only narrative. That was the only script. And so back to my original point, therefore, when detachment takes place in that environment, then I'm lost.
Yes, and you're lost if you don't detach either. So you're completely, you've got to detach to something. It can't be a simple detachment to just away from something. It's attaching to something more powerful, stronger, and, you know, and that is to grace, to goodness, to mercy. And not external, but internal, that we are the reservoir for grace.
I'm thinking out loud as we talk, and that's why even if someone who has that, they all they've known is a false self, and so and they want to detach from it, but they don't. There's no grounded place. There's almost I'm thinking out loud here, but there's almost in many cases an interim step. For example, AA is an interim step for so many people.
Absolutely.
They know they don't want to be that false self.
Absolutely.
But they're not sure who they are yet.
Yes. And the steps, if gone through well, will help identify a truer self. A self that's not associated with the needy, hurting, painful, resulting in numbing and escaping that, and that becomes
reality. The self that is not just a quote an attached self, but a clinging self. 100%, that's true.
So Terry, how do we find this? Not that I've attained it or have anything about it, but I at least know I have now a sense of process, a sense of direction, a new sense of understanding contemplatively that, you know, shows me I have a very, very long way to go. But there is a sense of a genuinely divine self that's in the image of God, and the image of God, in my view, is love and is goodness. And out of that flows mercy and grace and peace and kindness. But its goodness and love are the essential natures of it. That's simpler for me to deal with. What about those friends of ours that don't have that divine essence, that sense of the divine essence and, you know, that sense of something apart from themselves. Where do they go, Hirsch? You know, where do you go to find that authentic self?
You know, my first reaction, honestly, is you get lucky.
Yeah.
Because every once in a while, you're not aware of it, but somebody hugs you and looks at you and says, "That's not who you are."
Yeah.
And you start to find pieces of a self that is fully alive inside of you, but you didn't know it was there because it's buried.
That is so true. There's a person that's going to be on the show in a couple of weeks, and she advocates one of the vehicles she uses to help people find their authentic self is to first identify what you are not. In your core, you know, everybody thinks I am this, but I am not this. This is not me. And I there's something about that. I like that. Do you like that? You know, just say this. No, this is not me. I'm not exactly sure what is me, but I know what is not me.
Yeah, and I mean, because I like that, because that's the difference between being an onlooker and a witness. And a witness says, no, I see that. This is what I see.
Yeah, and that beautiful, you know, African of many, many African cultures talk about, I see you.
And I see you.
Mm-hmm. And when I see you, I have to continue to use my language, and so the listeners will have to adapt, but the core of the divinity within you, and that can be, that doesn't have to be any particular religion. You know, it's just this core essence that we are created, that we are, that it is a divine goodness created by, and that has been broken, and that we're trying to find our way home.
Well, that's what, when people say namaste or namaste, that's it. I see the divine inside of you.
Oh, is it? Is that what that means?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I like that. Yeah. I like that. We're on attachments, and before I get into detachments, which we're going to spend a lot more time on, but attachments, as we have, I think we've probably elaborated on this, but I want to be clear on it. What are your thoughts on the dangers of attachments that are held too deeply and end up being unhelpful, and they lie in the realms largely of possessions and beliefs, and maybe even especially beliefs? But what are the dangers of attachments to those things if they're not rewarding, if they're not real, if they're not true, if they're not who you are, and they're not good?
Are you talking about my commitment to golf?
Hey, if I golf like you, I wouldn't be having any complaints. You got no room to complain there. Too. When you golf like me, then you can bitch. Golf like you, you got no complaints.
Say that again. Attachments.
You know, the dangers of attachments to people or possessions or beliefs. How that leads us, maybe we've already articulated that. I kind of think maybe we've...
Well, but I mean, the thing is, if I... Here's the deal. So let's take attachment out of it. I like the word grounded.
Okay.
Connection, connected, grounded. If I am at home in my own skin, in that grounded place...
Now I have to stop you there. I don't even know what that means. What is home in my own skin? How do I know what home in my own skin is?
Because you've just said, if I become attached to all these other things that are not me, I'm not at home in my own skin.
Okay.
You've been around people who say stuff and you think to yourself, they don't even believe that. Why are they saying that?
Yeah, they sure don't act like it.
They're not at home in their own skin. You know, every spiritual reader you're reading now, at some point, they were at home in their own skin at some point of their juncture, some point of their journey. You know, they didn't have to prove anything anymore to be somebody. And here's the great part about being at home in your own skin, is you're no longer afraid about being wrong or having screwed up.
Excellent, yes.
You're no longer afraid about having attached yourself Like, for example, we've had this conversation just theologically. There are certain things I believed about God when I was young that I don't even come close to believing now. In fact, I find them detrimental. But at one point, I was scared to admit that. Now, it's okay to say, yep, it saw me through some waters, but it wasn't the best me, and I wasn't in my own skin. But it's okay to say that.
But it was a journey.
It was a journey, but the whole point is, I don't have to pretend that it's all covered up. I don't.
That's good. That is, you know, now we're entering into Brené Brown's territory of vulnerability.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're not afraid of vulnerability. When you're home in your own skin, all the quote attachments that you've had, that you've quote needed, to be successful and whatever it is that you measure that stuff by.
I want to just kind of take a little tiny bit different tack on this because I think this is really important. And what about, and I have to use the word attachments because I don't think groundedness works in here. Maybe it does, you know, and I'm very open to that. But there is that kind of attachment to the false self that when it is challenged, it begins to control your mental or your emotional and spiritual selves. That when somebody offends you or criticizes you or fails to acknowledge you, let's take you out of it. When someone offends me, doesn't acknowledge me, then that takes control, and I respond sort of a self-doubt or an anger or a frustration. That's when I'm attached to the wrong thing because I'm now battling wrong things. I'm not even in my true self, and I'm battling. I'm in a battle.
That's because, and I wholeheartedly agree with that. Wholeheartedly agree with that. And you can tell when your reaction is simply outrage or reaction. If I'm reacting, merely reacting, then they've hooked something in me, and then I know I'm fighting the wrong war. I'm fighting the wrong battle. They're making some sort of declaration about my worth and or identity that is not acceptable because I don't believe it myself.
Yeah, I only believe it out of it protects me.
That 100% true.
And then you're messing with my protection because so often my beliefs, I am what I believe. And
if
I'm not capable of challenging my beliefs, I'm in trouble.
Right. As if, yeah, you know, I mean, that's the whole thing about, you know, the whole thing about getting to heaven and what it said to you. And it's great when you get to heaven and God says, you know, everything you believed was wrong, right? But I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
In other words, your identity and your value is far more profound and deeper than what you, quote, attached to it.
Yeah. That reminds me of a great line I heard a couple days ago and by a spiritual teacher that says, God says to us, I see you and I'm coming for you. Just be ready. And that's a beautiful concept.
And of course, you know my humor. God says, I'm coming for you, but I'm very old, so it will take a while.
Yes, and age doesn't make a difference. It will take a while. You know what I want to do is, Paul, is it time for a break or do we want to go on? Because I've got several other things I'd like to talk about. But let's take a brief break here. Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and I'm with my great friend, Terry Hershey. We are talking about Let me look at the title of this show so I know what we're talking about. We're talking about detachment and emotional sanity. The word detachment is a very scary word, and we're going to... Well, it's not that it's a scary word, but if not used properly, it's a very dangerous word. I think you know, I had mentioned earlier, and I will recount that as I'm looking for what I mentioned, that at first glimpse, it would seem that to detach from your emotions might lead to some sort of callous and miscalculated mind devoid of compassion or empathy. And that could happen with detachment, couldn't it, Terry?
Yeah.
That you separate from emotions that are indeed critical. Yet, if you get so tied to the emotion that what others do or say or believe brings you to some sort of vitriol or anger or self-doubt, then that attachment to that belief is not as healthy as it might be, because it needs to be, we need to hold views of ourself and our belief system. Would you agree with this, that we need to hold on to it, but we need to hold on to it loosely, not with a vice grip, that it is malleable and it can change and it can adjust with more information and more experience?
Our identity, you say?
Yes.
Yeah.
Our known identity, because what do we know? Because we don't, you know, it takes a lifetime to know yourself.
Yeah, but that's fine. But if I'm at home in my own skin, then my value, you talked about the dignity that's within, then that's a non-negotiable. And it takes a lifetime to actually embrace that at some time. And the times I don't embrace it well, then I attach myself to other things that I think will prop me up.
Yeah,
that's how I know it. That's how I know it's a crazy attachment, because it props me up.
And that's what I wanted to get in. No, go ahead, and then I'll ask my question.
Well, I'm just going to say that. See, like the vitriol now in conversations, social media is just crazy.
Oh, I can't even look at it.
Yeah, and someone says, you know, you shouldn't be so emotional. And at face value, I get that statement. I get that statement. But there's a part of me that, if you take an issue, like an issue of, well, let's go, I mean, let's just take it.
Take a real issue.
You just take an issue of, well, let's just even step back, because I just read a book on slavery. So you take an issue about slavery, which goes into white supremacy now, but you could take an issue. And,
not caste. And, you're not talking about caste.
Yeah, well, Isabel Wilkerson, the book she wrote before that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You say I should detach from my emotions. But here's the thing, is that if I'm not an onlooker but a witness, then I give a shit. I care. Well, if you give a shit, your emotions are involved. So I've tried to sort this out. But there have been times when my emotions, quote, have gotten the best of me, because they didn't come from the authentic part of myself. They only came from the part of myself that had to prove something or better somebody or beat somebody up.
Very good point.
You and I have had, we've both had conversations where we've been quite angry, emotional.
Yes.
But there's no need to beat each other up.
Right.
And that's because I've been right.
Yeah, I am so centrist that I'm one, you know, I'm a flake. I'm one way one day and one way another day. But you know, I want to take this need for detachment. I don't think, and here I'm thinking out loud as well.
Sure.
I don't think we detach from emotions. I think we detach from the control that results from emotions, the control behavior.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you 100% there. Is that exactly. If we assume the emotion is supposed to get me something or get me something I don't think I have right now. Yes.
Yeah, and emotion to me, emotion that doesn't lead to lead to reconciliation, lead to compassion, lead to empathy, lead to love, is a very questionable emotion.
Now that is a great sentence. I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Oh my goodness. Paul, record that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. In other words, it takes us somewhere back to that grounded place.
Back to the grounded place. I like that. I like the use of the word grounded there. Yeah, absolutely. Now, another type of attachment that we can have, we've been talking about the negative attachments and, you know, and the self-doubt and the criticism and all. What about the influence of popularity or adulation, and we end up with too high a view of ourselves? Then we're in an equally precarious position, don't you think?
Yeah, but anyway, that too high of view ourselves is simply, you know, the Queen Mary?
Of course.
Of course you do. Long Beach. So when they parked it there, and it's got three big smokestacks, massive smokestacks. When they originally parked it there back in long time in the day, the smokestacks had finally disintegrated. And you know what had kept them together for all these years?
I have no idea.
For so many years, they just kept repainting them every year, and the paint held them together.
Let's don't hope that's true with the Golden Gate Bridge that they paint once a year.
I'm just saying, but that's what you're talking about with what we do with ourselves. We just paint and hope that that takes care of it.
But, you know, I guess what I'm getting at is the popularity adulation. As soon as we start believing that, we start thinking so highly of ourselves that we are not capable of taking, being brought down a bit or criticized, and that ends up in the anger. And if it ended up in self-doubt, that would be good, but the self-doubt is denied. So it's just a totally view of somebody else is wrong. Look at all these people that love me. How dare you not love me?
Yeah, and you see, and people with that kind of insecurity, everybody has to be a member of the choir, and then...
Yeah, I think we don't often go political here, but I think we have a precedent that is the state of...
Yeah, when everything has to be about you, then back to your original question, what the hell are you attaching yourself to?
Yes, and that too requires a sense of detachment from that. And I like you know being comfortable in your own skin. I like my friend who's going to be on the show, Lindsay Davis, who talks about one of the first things we do is evaluate and attempt to remove that which we falsely are, and a recognition, I don't want to be that person. We're removing the attachments, so we're becoming detached. As you brought up early in the show, which I think is so valid, detachment is of no help unless you can attach to something that is genuine within.
Correct. That's the thing, is you tell somebody to detach, right? But if there's nothing there to ground you, then you simply bounce. And you know that. For example, I detach from alcohol. But if there's nothing there, you attach to something else.
Which is a supplement for alcohol. It's some other addictive means that,
yeah, and we,
that
everybody
numb
should,
and
should learn that. Else. Everybody should learn the fact that supplement is fundamentally true. And even vitriol, the anger, the umbrage we have is a supplement, you know?
It is. It certainly is. Do you find as we're closing up our time here, I want to enter a whole new word in our lexicon here, and that's humility. Do you find that humility seems to require a sensitive balance between personal attachment and detachment? that humility, the knowing, maybe humility is being comfortable in our own skin. Humility of just, you know, it's not better or less than. Humility is simply me and not thinking too highly or too lowly of myself. And in order to accomplish that, there are certain things I need to remove my attachments to. I need to detach. And in the process, attach to those healthy things that can give me a sense of well-being.
Yeah, so one of the novices in the monastery back in the day comes to the abbot, and abbot's watering the garden, and the novice is, so God has returned to earth, and today is the day. What are you going to do? And the abbot said, I'm going to finish watering my garden.
Right.
Right. Humility. I'm good being here, being this me, because there's nothing I'm ashamed of and nothing I need to prove.
And I have a follow-up story to that, that goes back a few years. It goes back to St. Bonaventure in the 1200s. And he was made bishop of the Franciscan order. And he was in his monastery doing dishes. And so they came with a holy procession with, I'm not Roman Catholic, so I don't know, is it a mitre or a mite, the hat that the...
Yeah,
a mitre,
yeah,
the right. Mitre came with a bishop's mitre. He was doing dishes, and he told him, go hang it out on a tree. I'll pick it up after I'm done doing dishes.
Exactly. Yeah, I'll keep watering the lawn. I got dishes to do. In other words, and that's the thing about the thing that the statement from a priest in the 1700s, the sacrament of the present moment, that you're literally grounded in this moment. You're okay right here. You're alive and well right here.
You are alive and well right here. And all that we need in life, I believe this, Terry. I don't believe that we discover any greatness in our souls. We recognize it because it already resides within us. Our goodness, our love, our image, in my language, our image of God is in us at creation, and it's been hidden, it's been locked away by the flawed nature of humanity. But every now and then, when we hear truth, when we hear beauty of perhaps in some of our conversation, we don't discover that beauty, that divine nature within us. We simply recognize it. It's already there.
Recognize and embrace. That's the next step. Embrace.
That's the next step. Recognize and then fully embrace. And then you are, in Terry Hershey's language, you are at home in your own skin.
Amen, Charles. That was good. Amen.
Yeah. I think that's a fine way to come to resolution of this absolutely not so difficult subject. Boy, you had just wonderful ideas, Terry. It was so helpful for me. I mean, because this is something I am personally wrestling with, not wrestling with, but something I'm personally dealing with, and it's part of my life right now. And you gave me lots of ideas of clarity that were really helpful. Thank you.
And I think I want to say this because I know you personally though too, but the freedom to wrestle with is the power here. In other words, that's part of the deal. It's not like something will be resolved one day or not resolved. The wrestling with is really the miracle of the grace being uncovered.
You cannot bring up the story of Jacob wrestling with the angel of God. And
absolutely.
And
that's
says,
good. There you go.
I will not, Jacob saying, the angel of God saying, I have to leave. It's morning, I have to leave. And Jacob saying, I will not leave until you bless me. And he says, okay, what is your name? And he says, my name is Jacob. And he says, no, your name is no longer Jacob. Your name is Israel, which means those who wrestle with God. And God named his entire people, his entire nation, his devout followers, God fighters, God wrestlers, that we must wrestle with God. We must wrestle with these truths. And, you know, what we've been saying are not easy truths for our listeners, because they're not easy truths for you and I or half the mystics in the world. These are not easy truths. But it is a wrestling, and we have permission to wrestle with God. We have not only permission, he sort of prides himself on a nation that is ready to do that. Let's get together and work this out. It's a beautiful concept, Terry. I love that.
Good conversation.
Okay, Hirsch, man, thanks again for spending time. I know our listeners love having you on the show. You always bring such depth, such fun, and such insight. And I really want to thank you, brother.
My pleasure. Always good.
Thank you. And I also want to thank all our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And please be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.